Welcome to Semester Sneak Peek, our special summer series that provides a preview of courses available this coming fall semester. I am your host, Bethany Solomon, Associate Editor of the Northeast Campus here at the TCC Connection. Today we have a very special guest, Jeff Smith, and he is a TCC Unjunct Professor, Signature Symphony Principal Violist, and President of Songsmith Records.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I started playing violin when I was 10 years old because my older brother and sister played violin. The summer of my sixth grade year, the teacher came to me and said, you know, you're kind of a beefy, husky looking boy. You need to play the viola. I said, viola? It rhymes with granola. I don't want to quit the violin. I don't get what I'm getting into here. She said, oh, no, you're not going to quit the violin. You're going to learn how to double. Double. It rhymes with trouble. I don't think I want to do that either. No, no, you'll be fine. So I got to take two instruments to school, the violin and the viola. Learned how to play both of them. And then not long after that, the Beatles were real popular. Got a guitar and started going on that.
Very cool, very cool. So how did you find your way into the education as far as like with your music? Did you study in undergrad music specifically, or did you kind of had a broad range of interests beyond music?
Oh gosh, you know, you look back on pivotal things in your life. One of the pivotal things of my life was, I guess I was in late junior high, early mm-hmm. high school, and I had an electric guitar, and Dad had come home with a Wallensock, as a German tape recorder, and it had an auxiliary input on it. And I learned at a young age I could take the electric guitar output, plug it into that auxiliary input, crank the volume all the way up, play the guitar, turn its volume all the way up, and it would sound something like this. Coolest sound I had ever heard for about 13 seconds. I blew out the 8-inch paper cone speakers and a couple of power tubes, but that kind of left a mark on me like, you know, this is a cool sound. I got to get into this. I was going to be an aeronautical engineer all through high school. My dad was a fighter pilot in World War II. He had 96 missions over France. My grandfather had his PhD in mechanical engineering and actually wrote the maintenance manual for the B-25 Mitchell bomber. So I was going to be an aeronautical engineer until calculus first hour happened. Okay, now I had a morning paper route and an evening paper route. Okay, take your XY axis, translate it, rotate it, draw the hyperbola, spin the hyperbola, cut a hole in the hyperbola, and now find the volume generated. At that point, I figured, you know, I'd rather play a wrong note. I couldn't see myself designing something, having somebody get killed, because I misplaced a decimal point. But all through high school, I played with the Youth Symphony. My senior year, I auditioned, got first chair of viola of the Youth Symphony, and auditioned for the old Tulsa Philharmonic. I guess they were desperate, and I turned pro when I was 17. Went to the University of Kansas, was a viola major, and actually was a double major in viola performance and music education. And at KU, they had a computer music lab. And they had this, we're talking, you know, early, mid-1970s, and they had an ARP 2600. This is a synthesizer, analog synthesizer. You have never seen so many buttons, knobs, dials, flashing lights, sliders, patch cords. It was like, golly, what does this thing do? What does this thing do? And I actually had a blast in that course. That kind of got me back here. From there, I came down to TU, finished up a bachelor's of music ed, got a master's in music ed, taught in Wichita, Kansas for 3 years, did band and orchestra up there 3 years, went back to school at the Cleveland Institute of Music, picked up a master's in viola performance. I've always believed that if you're going to be a teacher, you ought to be able to do it. There's the old joke, you know, those that can do, those that can't teach, those that can't teach become administrators. I kind of believe that if you're going to teach, you ought to be able to produce. You ought to be able to do it.
Right, right, right.
Does that make any sense?
It certainly does. Yeah, definitely. So moving into as far as like the technical aspect of music, mm-hmm. Recording studio techniques, you have a lot of orchestra experience. How does that translate into the studio?
Sure. Well, I was a band and orchestra director for 27 years, and the times that I wasn't playing classical music with the orchestra, I was playing fiddle, guitar, keyboards, ran the monitor mix, and the light show for rock and roll bands.
Wow.
And that was an awful lot of fun, setting all that stuff up. It gets really tired after about 15 years of lugging all that stuff around the back of a pickup truck. it dawned on me, you know, I can make music, and instead of lugging all this PA gear and power amplifiers and all this other junk, why don't I just build a house and have the recording studio, have them come to me and we make music, and I don't have to lug all this stuff around. So I started Songsmith Records in the mid-80s, back when we had what they were called ADAT machines. They recorded on a VHS cassette, and they would theoretically, and I say theoretically, they would synchronize together. So you could buy two ADAT machines, and you could have, 16 channels of digital audio. You could have a grand total of about 34 minutes worth of digital audio.
Wow.
Of course, you had to format the tape first before had to record onto it, and that's about as much fun as watching paint dry. But it was there, and we had 16 channels of digital audio. I've still got those ADAT machines. And once in a while, we'll get an artist back in the studio that recorded with me 20 years ago. Said, Jeff, do you still have those ADAT tapes? Yeah. Can we dump them into Pro Tools and clean them up a little bit and re-release? Sure.
Fun stuff. Definitely. Yeah. That's really cool. So what do you think, as far as like your students come to play in the courses that you teach here, mm-hmm. what has been more the most challenging for your students in terms of getting comfortable with technology or for musicians in general?
Wow, that's kind of a tough question. Each student is different. Each student has their own strengths and weaknesses. On day one, I have them fill out a little, I call it a student data sheet, and tell me a little bit about yourself so that I know what I'm dealing with. A lot of times I'll get students in the class that have already had some Pro Tools experience. They might run sound at their church. And then I've got kids that, I sang in choir, but I want to learn how to, record myself, and they don't know anything about the technology. So the challenge for me as the instructor is to kind of teach on two or three different levels. So I try to teach to the very, very raw beginner, right. To the kid that's had some experience, and to those kids that, could probably teach me a thing or two. That's the fun part about the teaching. In the class, I've got to make sure that every kid knows we only get to play with three things in audio: frequency, amplitude, and time. And all the buttons and knobs and dials, oh my! All have to relate to either frequency, amplitude, or time. And if you understand that basic concept, then you can go through with, what does this knob do? How does that change the sound?
So a lot of it's experimenting as you're sitting in the course
And that's how they learn. We tell them, for example, once we define what frequency, amplitude, and time are, we go into signal flow. Okay, what happens? How does the ear work? How does the microphone work? So we trace the audio from the vibrations of your voice, your guitar, whatever, through the microphone or the line inputs into what happens next. So it all goes into the patch bay. From the patch bay, it goes into the mic pre's. From the mic pre's to the IOs, from the IO to the computer. We explain all that stuff in signal flow.
Nice.
Because all an audio engineer does all day long is, I don't hear the guitar in my left ear. Why not? Or I've plugged this in and I don't hear anything.
Right.
Or I turned this knob and nothing happened. Right. Back up and figure out why.
And that's what you give your students leeway to do, is figure out why they made a mistake.
Yeah.
So they would have to
If you tell them what they did wrong, they'll never figure it out themselves.
Right.
If they go through that, and your cohort here can attest to this, I will rarely just tell a kid an answer. I say, do you got an iPhone on you? There's this thing called Google. Look it up. I'll wait. And then, for example, when they learn the measurements of what decibels are and how to measure frequency, if I'll ask them a question like, what's the unit of measurement for frequency? And they'll say, decibels? No, that's the measurement for amplitude. Man, it hurts if you don't know this. Hertz being, cycles per second. H-E-R-T-Z is the measurement. So it hurts if you don't know this. Ba-dum-tsh.
So that's a good one, actually.
We try.
It's a very good one.
The stupider something is or the funnier it is, hopefully they'll remember it.
It sticks better. Yeah, definitely. It helps them stick. All right, so as far as like walking away from the class, how important is it for students to apply this in the aftermath? Are these techniques that can easily be forgotten if they're just not applied immediately?
Oh, gosh, I hope not.
I mean, if you have students that reoccur and come for, let's say, do you teach a second course as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there is actually a Recording Studio Techniques 2 class.
Okay.
Theoretically, there are two sections of Recording Studio Techniques 1, which will have 16 kids total, 32. Out of those 32 kids, if Recording Studio Techniques 2 is offered, we only take 8. So it's like 1/4 of those two classes, if they want it, we're limited to 8. We did a really cool thing this last semester, and the students had to produce a video. And they had to literally, we shot the video on a GoPro camera. It was actually pretty terrible, but they learned the process. They had to get a video program onto their computer. There are several free ones. And just experiment from there. Okay, here's the scene we shot. And the whole theme of the video was, well, this is terrible. Once again, I love my wife, but she has this problem of collecting small electrical appliances. If there is a small electrical appliance made, she has it. She's got four or five crock pots. I don't know how many mixers she's got, toasters, curling irons, you name it. If it's a little vacuum thingies, if it's a small electrical appliance, mm-hmm. she has it. So the format of the class was, we're going to make a video, and you all have seen these videos of the poor animals, behind the cages, for the charities, and there's this poor dog with one eye, and it's snowing outside, and he's missing a paw or something. Mm-hmm. There's a choke collar around this poor animal. Well, the idea was, we're going to have small appliances that need a home, and they produced some absolutely hilarious. We came up with do you know a small appliance that needs a home that's been abused? We're sorry. SARI, the Small Appliance Rights Institute. So we made a video. We got a T-shirt with an iron. One of the appliances was an iron that burned a hole in the shirt. So the kids said, no, bad iron, whacked it with a newspaper. And then later on, we used that same shirt with this big old iron burn on it. We'll give you this shirt if you'll give us $19 a month. That's only 63 cents a day. So I hope the kids learned a lot from that. They learned how to put it all together, how to edit the video, how to synchronize the audio to it, how to come up with the audio. And one student actually wrote some of this really cool, darkish sounding, sad piano music that everybody wanted to use because it was so cool.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It was neat.
I'll
have to give you some.
That's really cool. So you have different types of projects and assignments in the class.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure,
yeah.
Of various different ways. So for exams, what should students expect when they think of an exam for Studio Techniques class? How will
exams.
Their knowledge be tested?
Well, I figure kids are not in junior high school or elementary school anymore. I mm-hmm. do not use true, false,
written
multiple choice.
Right.
Most of the quizzes and tests are done with fill in the blank and short answer, hopefully using correct English and spelling the words correctly. It's not like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. We'll give you four choices of the right answer. You pick the right answers up here. I want you to go a little bit beyond that.
Right.
We also give the kids all kinds of interesting ways to help memorize things like that. For example, can you name the planets in order from the sun out?
Probably not in order.
Okay. I can.
You can?
Yeah. My wife took an astronomy class once. Okay, and if you take the first letter of each planet,
mm-hmm.
like M for Mercury, V for Venus, E for Earth, another M for Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and back then Pluto. So she came up with a simple little sentence. My very enormous man, Jeff Smith, understands nothing, period.
She came up with that?
She came up with that, totally originally. And, crunch. So you take all that information.
Wow.
So you condense all that down. Okay. It's like taking the five Great Lakes, Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Superior, and spell the word homes. So if you take that data and condense it, it's like putting it in a zip file in your brain. So I give the kids all kinds of techniques like that where they can memorize some of these techniques. And hopefully it'll help them not only in audio engineering, but in life.
Right.
If you're on stage running sound for a band somewhere or in a church situation, all of a sudden things die, you don't want to turn to the guy next to you and go, gosh, what do we do?
Right.
If you're the head audio engineer, you got to figure it out quickly.
Right. It's about application. So it's not just knowing the what or how.
Yeah.
It's about knowing why.
Yes.
And understanding why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's actually what differentiates it from a lot of
Well,
courses.
That's the same thing. If you know anything about Bloom's taxonomy of educational objectives, harking back to many, many years ago, if you just have a knowledge level question, who invented the telephone?
Right.
That's knowledge level. If you have a question like, we're going to form a band, you're going to come up with a song, either a cover song or something, and you guys are going to record a single here in the class. And we're going to pick members of the band, and then you go for it from there. That takes a whole lot more brains to be able to do that.
It takes creativity.
Absolutely. You got to coordinate your schedule together. Abstract, you got to pick a song or come up with an original cover song. Do the rehearsals. Figure out how you're going to mic the drums. I'll show you how to mic them, but then you do it and why you mic them this way.
Right. It takes a lot of brain power to figure out what you're going to do.
The more you use it,
the
more you use it, the stronger it gets.
Yeah, that's really good. That's actually a really good way of putting it. So for current lineup of courses, Beyond Techniques 1, Studio Technique 1, and then 2, do you have any other courses?
That should happen in the spring.
Okay.
I teach private lessons on violin and viola through TCC, but that's only a handful of students, like two or three.
Oh, okay.
I also teach private guitar out of my house, but that's all right. That's a different story.
All right. So you do teach those courses. Do you have anything as far as like the semester split? What are you teaching what semester?
Oh, well, okay. In the first semester, in the fall semester, we only offer studio recording techniques.
Yes.
One. And hopefully there will be two sections. Then from that, we'll offer in the spring Studio Techniques 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. So advice for students as well. Anyone who's just getting into it, people that don't have experience, what would you say they should expect for the class, and what do you think they should expect coming outside of the class?
Bring a pencil and a notepad. You'd be amazed on day one. Sometimes there's not a whole lot of difference between first graders and college kids. And you write something on the board, and some kid in the back will say, "Is this going to be on the test?" Yeah. The idea is if it's on the board, it's important enough, I feel, that you need to know it. Because if you are successful in music, you know, you can make a whole lot of money. Pay all that taxes into Social Security and support me when I'm older. Yeah.
That's a very good point. So if you want to be successful for a musician specifically, how important is it to learn studio techniques and to know how to produce your own music?
In the music business especially, what has been relatively successful for me, I call it a multiple income source.
Yeah.
My main income for many, many years was teaching public schools. On the side, I was playing classical music in two different orchestras, the Bartlesville Symphony and the Signature Symphony, and occasionally the Tulsa Philharmonic, Tulsa Opera, Tulsa Ballet. On the weekends, we weren't doing classical. We were rocking and rolling in, establishments. We'd call them gun and knife clubs. Bring your own. Within, 100 miles of Tulsa. We've played every gun and knife club within, 200 miles. So you had money coming in from the rock and roll side. You had money coming in from teaching private lessons on weekends. You had money coming in from your teaching job, from teaching, money coming in from your symphony gigs. Then if you write music, you can create that way and get royalties from that. That way, if any one leg of that collapses, at least you've got something else to depend on.
Right.
In the music business, to really make it big, you've got to be extremely good at one thing. And then you can afford everybody else to pay them to record your CD for you, to book you here and there. But the more you know about every aspect of music, how do you finger a saxophone? Where's the best way to mic a saxophone or a flute or a guitar or a violin or viola, cello or a bass? Where does their sound come out from? Where does it sound the best? What kind of mic do you use? All of that stuff. The more you know, the more you're worth. And you apply everything in music. There was a time in my teaching career where the school I was teaching, I had been there 5 years, and they were going to close the school due to a reorganization plan. My last year teaching there, they'd lost all the electives. The only elective you could take at this school was either band, orchestra, or gym. No home ec, no foreign languages, nothing. That was it. And they closed the school the next year to reorganize. Orchestras fold right and left sometimes. Schools change. And in the music business especially, you've got to have a backup plan. Then you get smart, buy a house, accelerate the principal on that. So you pay it off early. We paid our first house off in 8.5 years by accelerating the principal. And if you know anything about financing, that's a different topic. But that's how you can get successful.
Very cool. So I hear that it's important to be multifaceted,
yes,
but also to master one area.
Well,
as your main, is that
if you want to be
good at one,
if
thing?
You want to be really successful in music, and you've got to be able to sing like Garth Brooks or Whitney Houston,
right?
Or you've got to be able to play the violin like Itzhak Perlman. That's all he does. For me,
right.
I can't do that. I'm too much attention deficit disorder. I get attracted by all the flashing lights. I'm watching your engineer over here watching the video going, wow, cool, we're recording this in GarageBand, right? Neat stuff. And I'm watching all these little lights flashing over here, and she's turning around smiling, listening to us on the headphones, running through the, and I'm wondering, gee, what does that knob do? Oh, that's the interface there that she's running through. So for me, you know, I've done the 6 hours of practice every day. When I was at the Cleveland Institute of Music getting my viola master's, you know, 6 hours a day of viola. God, I hate the viola sometimes. You know, it's like too much. Put it down. Go play the guitar for a while. Go play the fiddle in a country band somewhere. You know, make it fun.
But you put a lot of time into it. You definitely invested a lot of time into it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's awesome. All right. So just to go on an overview of your courses, once again, Studio Techniques 1,
mm-hmm.
Studio Techniques 2,
yep.
You teach
viola and violin.
Viola. Mm-hmm. Oh, you teach violin as well.
Yes.
Okay. So those are private lessons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For both majors and non-majors.
Okay, great. So do you have a special email address or office-based number that your students can reach you at, or potential students?
Sure. Well? I have the TCC email, but I've had more luck with my own home personal email. It would be okay to do that one?
Yeah.
Sure.
Most definitely. Okay.
My personal email is songsmithrecords@cox.net. And that is SongsmithRecords. It's all one word, songsmithrecords@cox.net. Now, if you go on the web and go to songsmithrecords.com, understand I've been busy and I haven't updated the website in about 15 or 17 years. It's on my list of things to do. I'm working on it. But I've been busy.
All right, great. So where are your classes based at? What campus?
We are based at the Southeast Campus.
Southeast Campus. All right, sounds good. So this has been Bethany Solomon and Jeff Smith at TCC Connection. Thank you for listening, and we hope to continue the series for the summer.
Thank you, Bethany. I appreciate your time.
We appreciate you as well.